The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
There is a saying in the Vipassana world. And the saying is, if it's not simple, it's not Vipassana. If it's not simple, it's not mindfulness practice. And some people will engage in lots of reading of Buddhism and learn about this and that and learn about many different things about techniques and meditation. And it can seem more and more complicated the more you learn. But that little saying is a good thing to keep in mind, that if it's not simple, it's not Vipassana. So what is the simplest thing? One of the simple things is meditating on breathing, mindfulness of breathing. And I thought today that I would go back to basics. But basics, the basics of being attentive to breath and focusing on the breath, is not, kindergarten Buddhism. It isn't that it's, you want to get over that quickly to get into the more advanced things. And one of the ways to think about it is that many of the problems that we have in our lives we're trying to grapple with, ways we grapple keep us in, struggle with them within a particular mindset, within a particular way of thinking that is not the way out. It's kind of like we're stuck in a labyrinth of these kinds of things. So certain things, we try to think our way out of the problems. That's not where the solution is going to come. We're thinking. In fact, if we keep thinking and thinking and thinking, we keep ourselves kind of stuck in like on a spider's web, kind of just it doesn't really not the way out. Or somewhat related to this is that, emotionally, if we feel, sometimes we can feel certain kinds of stuckness, depressed, sad, maybe angry, a variety of things. And if we try to think our way out of it, then sometimes the thinking itself takes on some of the characteristics of how we're feeling. So that we think in angry ways, we think in depressed ways. And so it kind of keeps us in that, it's kind of mutually supportive. And as the thinking is maybe contracted or tight or agitating, it feels uncomfortable. And so then we think more because we have a problem, not realizing the very way we think is just going to make it worse and worse and tighter and tighter. So sometimes what we want to do is to step out of the paradigm, out of the frame of reference, out of the mindset that we're in, and engage in our life in, outside of the normal patterns. And breathing is one of those ways, mindfulness of breathing. And to kind of make it a place, this discovery of how powerful it is to turn our attention into the breathing. It's actually a very powerful thing to do. It's not like a wimpy thing. And it's very, very helpful in so many different circumstances. For no other reason, because it helps us to step out of a certain mindset that's not so useful to stay in. And sometimes it gives us a new perspective that then we can go back and look at our issues in our life, our problems, our situation, and see it with fresh eyes or with a fresh mind, and maybe find a different way out of it, a different solution or something than we could if we just stayed circling and circling and circling in the old frame of reference. And so for some people, the mindset or the frame of reference, way of thinking around mindfulness of breathing can be very cerebral, can be very much thinking about their lives, thinking about breathing. And you can read books on mindfulness of breathing and you have all these ideas in it. And it can stay in this world of thinking and thoughts and ideas of breathing. And we almost like we're in the control tower looking down at the breath and analyzing it, manipulating it, engineering it, trying to get the breathing to cooperate so that it would somehow have a good effect on us. And you know, we have these different parts of our brain, they say, nervous system. And the, you know, the conceptual thinking part is one part. And they say that kind of a deeper structure in the brain is the emotional structures of the brain. And to really get into the mindfulness of breathing, it helps if we have almost like an emotional relationship to it. Almost as if we kind of are tuning in more of an emotional level than on a thinking, thoughts level of it, of it all. And so in that regard, and now I'd like to tell a story, because stories sometimes touch into this deeper part than just telling you, you know, it's a good idea to stay with your breath. And it's a simple story, but it's one of the foundational stories of Buddhism. So many of you probably heard it before. And it's a sweet story about the Buddha when he was a child. The story starts off as an adult. And as an adult, he's in his quest of somehow to find a solution to his existential problems, to suffering that he's trying to solve. And he spends about 6 years of his life pursuing a solution, a quest, visiting many different teachers in India of his time. And one of the core practices back in India, one of the options for spiritual quests, was asceticism. So to starve oneself was one way. And another way was to hold one's breath. And in a particular story, he's practicing these things. And he's describes in graphic language how much pain he was experiencing, starving himself almost to death. And also how much pain he experienced by holding his breath. I don't know if holding your breath this long will make your head feel like it's going to explode. It's kind of like the description. I think you might be faint first. But anyway, it's given in graphic detail how much pain he had kind of holding his breath, you know, up against the edge of death or fainting or something. And at some point, he decided that he had done asceticism as thoroughly and fully as he could, and the only next thing to do was just to die, and he didn't see there was any point to doing that. So he decided to stop his asceticism, and he ate some food to nourish himself, and then in a more relaxed state of mind, he was thinking, what do I do? And he remembered a time when he was 6 years old. And it seems that as a six-year-old, it was the time of the spring plowing, kind of, a ritual plowing of the fields, first plowing of the year. And so a lot of people were out. And people are out in the fields, and he was left alone in the shade of a rose apple tree. And perhaps forgotten from, you know, all the hustle and bustle. And apparently he just sat there very content and very happy. And his people were nearby. There was a cool shade of a tree. It was maybe a very safe, maybe somewhat idyllic place to be. And in that safety and stillness and being left alone, and maybe he was even watching a little bit what was going on out there, his mind, his heart, his body settled in to a state of well-being. Peaceful, content, peace, you know, just kind of settled in, holistic, whole. And it was very different state than what he'd been experiencing through asceticism. And he said, maybe this is the way forward. Maybe this good feeling that I have here, being settled, feeling safe, feeling contented, feeling some kind of joy and happiness coursing through the body, maybe this is the way forward. And so then he pursued that approach, and when he went to meditate, he tapped into that six-year-old sense of well-being that he experienced. And he found in doing that, he could get concentrated and still. And that became the entryway for him, for the Buddha, towards his enlightenment, towards his freedom. And so this idea that we would find something inside of us as a wellspring of well-being, or a sense of safety or peace or something, and that that is kind of what's needed to really allow us to settle deeper, to enter into a different reference point, a different mindset than how we're normally living. So the breathing can be that way, provided that we allow ourselves a chance to experience our breathing not as a cerebral exercise, but kind of like you're a lover of your breathing, or your breathing is your lover from the inside out, or you're being caressed, or you're caressing, that there's a sweetness there in the breathing. And so what does it take to have that kind of sweet feeling in how you breathe? It certainly takes being physically connected to the experience. There's no caressing without it being kind of physically intimate from the inside out, because the experience of breathing is an experience of sensations in your body. I do a lot of mindfulness of breathing for more than 40 years in my torso. I feel it in my diaphragm, I feel the movements of my belly, the movements of my rib cage, and I kind of feel it from the inside out. Sometimes it feels like a massage from the inside, massaging me from the outside. Sometimes it feels like a caress. Sometimes it feels like something very beautiful and sweet and wonderful just to be with the breathing. But to say that is not very helpful for people who have no way of discovering, of access to a sweet, beautiful, loving kind of sensations and feeling with the breath. And so that's not where it begins, unless it's easy to have that. Where it begins, usually, is a very simple willingness to begin focusing on breathing, the experience of breathing over and over again. And to in mindfulness practice, to really allow yourself to discover what it feels like to breathing. What's the body's experience of breathing? And it's not uncommon for people, and certainly for me, even after all these years of breathing, it's not uncommon after a day of being busy or something that I sit down to meditate and my breathing is uncomfortable. It's not dramatically uncomfortable anymore, but it is uncomfortable, partly because the way I've been living my life, I have been, you know, engaged in things and being busy and taking care of things, I think appropriately enough. But there is a subtle way of, or not so subtle way of, tension in the body, in the breathing, in the diaphragm, in the shoulders, in different places in the brain, that kind of gets activated and has certain momentum because of the continuity of being that way. And so when I sit down to meditate, I have to be willing, I have to understand that part of the deal is to experience the momentum of how I've been living my life, the momentum of holding or drivenness or busyness. And I've seen it even with being on the computer, that if I'm sitting on the computer doing some work, that if I do it long enough, it affects my experience of breathing. My breathing is not as relaxed and full as it would be if I'd sat meditating for an hour or so. So the first thing that I do when I sit down to meditate many times is just allow myself to experience breathing as it actually is. And without any worry or concern that it's not sweet and beautiful, but rather it's just what needs to be experienced and what needs to be touched and seen. It's kind of like you're with a friend who's troubled, and you don't tell your friend, you know, I'll see you when you're happier. You know, you you would go for a walk with your friend and just, you know, might be uncomfortable because of the trouble they have, but that's part of the deal. You're with your friend and you hold the troubled state that they're in and walk with them or sit with them, and that's part of how it is. And so if you want to befriend yourself, be your own friend, one of the really powerful things to do is to learn to befriend your discomfort and how you feel. Now, remember, this is supposed to be simple, and so the idea is that just staying with the breath, just letting the attention kind of be connected to breathing over and over again and over again. The mind wanders off, and we begin again. Keep coming back. And then it helps if you have the idea that it's okay to breathe with whatever is happening. So rather than treating physical discomfort, emotional storms, mental agitation, distractions, as distractions, we can just kind of breathe through them, breathe with them. Just stay with the breath. Just be. Let it be kind of like the ballast of the boat, or let it be the stabilizing force through it all, or the thread of stability, the path through everything is with the breathing. And one of the things that does is that more you can stay with your breathing, the more you come back to it, the less fuel you're giving to the spinning mind, to all the thoughts and ideas. The less you're feeding some of the mindsets which are not very useful to stay in all the time. And so the judgments, the commentary, the reactivity that we have towards all kinds of things, including our meditation, including ourselves as meditators and all these things, the more we can just matter-of-fact come back and be with the breath, be with the breath, be with the breath. Almost like you're, maybe this is not a good thing to say, but I'll say it anyway, and you either forgive me or forget it. Is almost like you're stupid. Like this is all you're going to do. Just stay with the breathing. Stay with the breathing. Nothing more sophisticated. And just breathe and breathe and breathe. And tune into the breath. Be present for the breath. See if there's some way of dropping in a deeper way with the experience of breathing. Remember, we don't want to just be cerebral with the breath, with the attention. We want the attention or the way of being and embodied to be almost like an emotional experience with it, or a tenderness with it all. So what does it mean to meet or be with the breath in a tender way, or to experience the tenderness of breathing that might be there? So the Buddha then turned his attention on this childlike simplicity that he experienced, this well-being, but it required having some feeling of safety and settledness in it. And so that's kind of like the direction we're hoping to go in doing the practice, is to tap into something that's almost childlike in how it is. It is not a sophisticated, complicated thing. It's not something you have to do a lot. It's not like you have to do it or make it happen, but it's more like we're making conditions for it to happen. We're kind of setting the container so something can begin bubbling up. So the Buddha did a lot of breath meditation, from all we can tell from the ancient texts. And he provided a wonderful description of 16 steps of how you can go through meditating on the breathing. I'm not going to go through all 16 steps, but I want to give you some of the principles behind it. The first instructions is just spend time getting to know your breathing. Take time feeling it and sensing it and accompanying it and allowing the breathing to accompany you. Discover what it's actually like to be breathing. What parts of the body are held or tight as you breathe? What parts of the body are loose and fluid as you breathe? Is the experience of breathing forced or is it relaxed? Is the experience of breathing shallow or is it deep? Is the experience of breathing fast or is it slow? How is the experience of breathing for you? And in this instruction the Buddha gives, there's no idea that it should be any particular way. Because remember, it's supposed to be simple. It's so simple that you don't have to judge it or feel like it's wrong to be one way or the other. All we're asked to do is to stay with it, feel the breath. And if you make conclusions, this is how it is, then you've kind of stepped away from the flow of the river of life that's there with the breathing. You want to stay in that flow of breathing because it'll change and move down river eventually, unless you step back on the shore. So you want to just kind of stay and get to know it and feel it. Inevitably, it'll change. And one of the reasons it changes is that if you're able to simply be aware, stepping out of the mindset of judging and thinking and engineering, simply be aware. Awareness is like giving breathing room to things, including breathing room for your breathing. And a lot of things begin to unravel, unfold, evolve if they have space and room. And so to simply be present in a very simple way with breathing, the whole system that we're in is, if the conditions are right, will relax. And a lot of what we discomfort around breathing has to do with tension. So we're creating this mental condition that allows things to relax in its own time. And it will, unless you kind of go back to the old mindset, and certain judgments are self-fulfilling. So if you say that doesn't work, and then you believe it, then it's true. You have to be careful. So the first task is just to get to know it, and get to know the body that's breathing. And then, the Buddha said, after you've got to know the whole experience of breathing and familiar with it and been with it for a while, at some point, but not too soon, but not too late, at some point, relax your body. Relax the tensions that are building up in your body. So don't make it too big of a project to relax, but don't never relax. If there's obvious tensions and holdings in the body that you discover as you're sitting there meditating, relax the body, soften. The idea of a soft, erect body is kind of the standard. Then, at some point, breathing begins to relax and soften, and a relaxed breathing tends to be pleasant. When breathing breathes itself in a relaxed, full way, if we've been on vacation long enough, then at some point maybe the breathing begins to kind of settle and we're not caught in the concerns of daily life. It feels much more relaxed. At that point, that's when the Buddha said, enjoy it. You're allowed to feel the pleasantness of that. You're allowed to feel the well-being that might be there, somehow comes along with a settled, easy, relaxed breathing. As the body gets softer, there are capacities in the body to feel a variety of feelings, sensations, emotions of well-being that are kind of built into or have a chance to flow when things are very relaxed and we're in the present moment. It's remarkable, we don't have to win the California lottery or a date with the most beautiful person in the world, or all kinds of things, you know, in the world, in order to have this sublime, wonderful feeling of well-being welling up from the inside. It's kind of built into the whole psychophysical system to have this if we're soft, relaxed, settled, and present, and not, you know, swirling and caught in our thoughts. It's remarkable that the whole human system is set up to have this natural sense of well-being if we can just kind of find our own rose apple tree to sit under while everyone else is busy plowing. And so then he says, feel that. And after you've felt that for a while, then notice if there's any mental tension. And not too soon and not too late, relax the mental tension. And it's because as the mind gets more sensitive, as we tune our sensitivity in with the breathing and the body, we also become more sensitive to what's going on in the brain and the mind. And it's possible to feel contraction, tension, agitation, pressure in that mind of ours. And it's possible at a certain right point to relax the mind, soften, quiet the mind, continue breathing, continue breathing. And then as we settle down further and more, then at some point, it just there's an aliveness, there's a goodness, there's a satisfaction that comes that's, again, just inherent, just being here and present and tuning in and having the mind not so spinning in thoughts and caught in thoughts, having the mind just kind of having a clarity of mind, a settledness of mind here. Appreciate that satisfaction. And then use that sense of satisfaction and goodness not to think more and make plans for all kinds of other things, tell everyone that they should meditate, but rather use it to help you get more concentrated. Let your the energies of the body, of the deeper mind, the deeper, not just the, you know, thinking mind, but the deeper mind, the emotional mind, let it kind of gather around and really stay here in a focused, clear, centered way. Breathing, breathing in and breathing out. Just stay with the breathing. Just gentle, loving. Be with the breath. Finally, at some point, as this kind of very much present moment experience of being with the breathing ripens and gets fuller and fuller, then there's a feeling of kind of where we start entering in to the flow or the pulsing of life, the fluidity of our experience of life. And to really kind of enter into the fluidity of human experience, the pulsing, the fluxing of it all in some deep, non-cerebral way is one of the things that begins to give a massage or soften or loosen up or tenderize the hardness of the mind's attachments, where the places where the mind is still stuck, the places of fear, the places of wanting, of expectations, of disappointment, the places of being holding on to certain kinds of conceits and ideas of who I am and what I should be, they begin to soften. They begin to soften in this flow and flux and pulsing of experience that can happen in this very deep, subtle place. And all along, this whole process the Buddha describes, it all happens, follows in the wake of just the simplicity of staying with the breath. Just be with the breath. Feel the breath. Accompany the breath. Love the breathing. Let the breathing love you. Feel it from the inside. So here's a poem, maybe. It's a poem. It could be poem. It's titled Breathing That Is. To breathe is to live. To live is to breathe. To live is to love. To love is to breathe. Breathing, that is, 1,000 kisses deep. Breathing, that is Buddha radiating peace. Breathing, that is Kuan Yin's warm touch. Breathing, that welcomes 1,000 new beginnings. Breathing, that allows 1,000 things to end. Breathing, where self disappears thousands of times. Breathing that breathes together with thousands upon thousands of other beings. To breathe is to live. To live is to breathe. To live is to love. To love is to breathe. So can you follow your breathing a thousand kisses deep inside of yourself? What would that mean? What does that evoke? What does that feel like? What might that be like? The whole experience, that tenderness and softness and the sensuousness and loving quality of just being with the breath, feeling it, and letting the mind become quiet in that intimacy and fullness, just breathing. And if you do that, then the usual mindsets that you live in, the usual ways of thinking, the usual ways of trying to solve issues, will become quiet for a while. And as it becomes quiet, then you might, it's like putting on new glasses or taking off filtered glasses. And then you'll be able to come back from that experience and see yourself, see the world around you in very different eyes, very different approach. And I'm not going to exactly say what, there's many options of what an alternative way can be, but one of the beautiful options is, this poem says, breathing that breathes together with thousands upon thousands of other beings. One of the ways is that intimacy and connection to ourselves through our breathing can also teach us an intimacy and connection to other beings. So another whole paradigm is love, compassion, caring, tenderness in relationship to other people. Not because we should, not because it's an idea that we try to implement, but rather it's just kind of what flows or comes from a new perspective, a new place of being that maybe is different from the usual mindsets that sometimes you're in. So to breathe, to trust your breathing, to entrust yourself to your breathing. Is a powerful thing. And last thing I'll say, I studied with a teacher, and a Zen teacher in Japan once upon a time, and he said, everything you need to know about Buddhism can be discovered in your breathing. And so maybe this talk today gives you a little sense of how valuable it is, the mindfulness of breathing, and hopefully I didn't say too many complicated things. Keep it simple. So we have some minutes here. If anyone would like to ask any questions, make comments, offer a testimonial around breathing.
Thank you. Very nice presentation. So in listening to you, I've been following breathing for a lot, many years, and I was taught to observe the breathing, which I think is consistent with what you described. But you also described feeling, and those are actually two different things, because if you observe, you can be non-judgmental. But if you feel it, it's a, it's a different thing. So can you clarify that for me?
Yeah.
The question?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, it's a great question. And I think that it's appropriate to say that different people have different ways of experiencing, different ways of monitoring, being present. So there's not like one way. And so for some people, the idea of observing really speaks to them deeply and well. And that's the observing tendencies really takes them far. So I don't want to, you know, take that away or suggest that's somehow not quite wonderful in itself. Some people, when they observe, though, hold themselves at a distance and hold themselves separate from the experience in a way that's not so useful. And sometimes it keeps them in the control tower up in the head in the thinking place where they're watching things. And there's a very subtle or not so subtle feeling of contraction around the self as the watcher, self as the observer. Another approach is to feel it, so to let it be a sensual experience partly. And so that's in the where we the sense, the nerves that sense, the sensing happens in the place where the sensations are. So the sensing of the experience of breath happens in those nerve ends, in a sense, more than up in the head, which is somehow thinking about it. So to feel what goes on in the torso and the chest and the diaphragm, a variety of places where people will be, sometimes helps people get out of that being the observer or the little tightness or the separation that can be there. And so some people find it actually really nice to really, it's more like a sensory awareness exercise than it is an observing exercise. And however, sometimes the people who do only sensing and feeling are so absorbed in that and so much enjoying it that they don't really have a lot of clarity in their mind about what's going on also. So the right balance between observing and feeling is part of the art of this. So if your way has been to observe, maybe it's been perfect for you and you continue, or you might see if you can do what you do how you do it until you're somewhat settled and present. And when you're present and settled, then use that settledness and begin tuning in to the felt sense, the sensations and the details of the sensations from the inside of the sensations. And see how that shifts the experience or what it might teach you or opens for you.
Thank you, that helps. You seem to be suggesting a balance.
Sorry?
You seem to be suggesting a balance.
Everything, balancing. You know, if you come here often enough, I think I have a strong tendency to not want to say ever it's one way. You know, it's this the way sometimes and this way the other times, and you know, so. But I think that finding our way in different state, like meditation goes through different phases, you know, of getting more and more concentrated or settled, and at different points in that settling process, different ways of being are appropriate. Different kinds of attention are useful. So there might be at certain points observing is more useful, and then other times feeling and sensing is more useful, and then later on the observing might come back as being most useful. So we have to kind of know how to kind of keep it simple, but know how to adjust it as we go along.
Great, thank you.
Thank you so much. I heard a teaching at some point where that was around choose a place to focus where you feel the breath. Other times when I'm sitting, I feel myself being like, oh, I feel it here, I feel it there, and jumping around. Uh-huh. I didn't know if you had any guidance on that. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. It's a great question. Yeah, it's fairly common to make the recommendation to choose some place. I like to call it the home place, the default place. So you don't have to think, where should I do now? What should I do? And if you get lost in thought, you don't have to where should I find it? Just know. It's so simple. Just go back here. And hopefully there's one place that tends to be the home, feels like the right place. And just like that be the default. And having one place that you could be really familiar with, it allows the kind of honing in or the settling or the focusing of the mind in a nice way sometimes. However, sometimes it's clear that the experience of breathing is a lot easier or more appropriate to elsewhere for the attention. And it's fine to shift the attention, and you know, if that's what's appropriate. So when I sit down to meditate, sometimes I'm very focused on the diaphragm area, the belly area. And that's my default. That's my home place. But then I follow it, and sometimes it shifts and moves. And I kind of follow it as it moves around. But I'm not jumping around. I'm following. And sometimes I just get curious about something happening somewhere in the body around breathing. And so then I'll bring my attention to that place because I'm following the curiosity. And sometimes it's all shifting and changing. But the instruction to choose one place and stay on it tends to be useful instructions for people who are relatively new to meditation because of the importance of keeping so simple, so simple. And a lot of what we learn in the first years of meditation has to do with, it was really useful to have a single reference point and then noticing all the ways in which the mind checks out, reacts, wanders off, and you start noticing all the tricks of the mind. And that's what you're kind of, from the beginning of meditation, you're often learning. So you don't have to be so good at breath meditation. You just have to be good enough at it so it shows you what your mind is doing. Okay. So I think we should stop, but I'm happy if you want to come and ask me questions at the end. I'll stay up here for a while. And I hope that you can make your breathing your good friend. And you can be a really good friend for your breathing. The two of you will get along really well for a long time. Thank you.